Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Hello and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Soccer podcast. I'm Connell McCourt and I'm joined today by Sam Cobson. Sam works for Sport in Kansas City in the communications department. Sam, how's it going?
Happy to be here, Connell. Thank you for having me on the show.
No worries, man. So, Champions League, let's just get straight into it then.
Let's do it.
Who's your team, first of all?
My team.
Who is your team? Yeah, just
In general, yeah, West Ham United in
West
the
Ham?
English Premier League.
Okay.
East London's finest.
Okay, right.
A team I fell in love with in 2007, a few years after I'd gotten into the English Premier League, when I was in
early high school. So you were searching for a team
for a while, for a team, and I wanted to go away from the traditional Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, you name it. Mm-hmm. But I did want to pick a team in England, and in the 2006-2007 season, West Ham United staged a remarkable escape from relegation.
Was it Tevez? And
Carlos Tevez, you bet, was kind of the leader behind that late push that got them, I guess helped them avoid relegation. They won on the final day of the season at Old Trafford against Manchester
That's
United.
That's right. Tevez scored too,
yes,
didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Jeez, and I suppose it was love from then.
So that, for me, was kind of what did it for West Ham. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, West Ham aren't in the tournament.
Not
we're
anywhere
about
close,
to discuss.
Are they?
No, they're not. Well, I mean, I like Pellegrini. I mean, it was a bit of a strange appointment. I didn't really understand the appointment just because of where West Ham were and where they were sort of trying to get to. I mean, I don't think. I know they moved into that new big stadium and stuff, but I don't think they were expecting to be top four anytime
sure.
soon. So he seems like a top four manager to me, probably just because he's managed City and because he managed Malaga and stuff before as well. But what did you think of the appointment, first of all?
Certainly a big name appointment. I wasn't sure, especially at the beginning, if it was the ideal fit. Still not sure if that remains the case, if he's a guy who's maybe cut out to manage a team quite like West Ham, you know, with somewhat limited resources, although they have made a step up in pedigree maybe since moving into the new Olympic Stadium in London.
Mm-hmm.
But I think while they started very poorly this season, they've found their feet a little bit. I like, actually, their chances of finishing top 12, we'll call it, maybe in the Premier League, although mm-hmm. they find themselves a bit lower right now.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think you'd be wrong, because they do have the talent. Like, they do have the talent. It was just a matter of sort of gelling and
Without
the players
question.
Playing together and sort of getting more reps in. But, yeah, I think they'll do well. And I suppose that's probably a good place to start, because this weekend, West Ham play in a big London derby against Tottenham, who are in Group B. So why don't we start with Group B then?
Let's do it.
So, Tottenham, let's just start with Spurs then. As I said, they'll be travelling. Is it at the Olympic Stadium or is it at Spurs? Well, I suppose
it
Spurs
is at Spurs.
It's at Spurs, so,
yes.
I mean, both the teams are away from home then.
Yeah.
But, so, Spurs, that's obviously a massive game. I mean, have you ever been to a West Ham? Have you ever been to London?
I have been to London, but unfortunately, I never made it to Upton Park and I haven't been to the new Olympic Stadium.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you know anyway, that is a bitter rivalry.
Sure.
That is a really bitter. I have family who are West Ham fans from London, and one cousin's actually a Tottenham fan as well, so it can become heated. So they're travelling there, not ideal before you go back into the Champions League, but that's
Certainly
what they
not.
Have to do. And then they're travelling away to PSV. So, and PSV, I don't know if you watch much of the Eredivisie or not, but they're leading. They are still 100%. They're one of the only clubs in the top leagues around Europe that are still leading the league with 100%. you seen any of them play?
Well, I'll tell you this. I think they've been extremely unlucky to have such a difficult draw in Group B, because you look at this group from top to bottom. Barcelona up there among the best in the world. Spurs obviously have quality, and Inter Milan will always be a tough out at San Siro. So PSV, we talk about Irving Lozano of the Mexican national team. He's obviously doing terrifically well at the start of the domestic campaign for them. So I think this is a PSV team, probably, Connell, that had they been maybe put in a weaker group, you maybe fancy them to maybe even get second. They've got the quality to do that. Luke de Jong and everything. So I think really it may come down to them just being kind of a victim of a group that is too difficult for them.
Well, I've marked it down that this is my favorite group. Like, this is the group that I mean, any of these teams, obviously you fancy Barcelona to go through, but Spurs have looked a bit up and down this year, and especially travelling away. Like, I think it depends on when you play which team in these tournaments. I think they've already played Barca. They've already played Inter Milan, so now they're going to PSV, and then they have a double header against PSV here. If they can get 4 points from that, if Spurs can get 4 points from that, I think they'd be looking okay. But going away to PSV, as we were saying, they're 100%. They haven't been beaten this year. It's not going to be an easy task for them going over there, like, is it?
Certainly not at all. And when you look at Inter Milan, 6 points tied atop the group with Barcelona, suddenly Tottenham, they've kind of had a history, haven't they, of drawing tough groups in the Champions League.
Yeah,
last year they were
in the past,
able
yeah.
to survive it, but in previous years they haven't. Suddenly you're looking at a very realistic possibility of them maybe dropping to Europa League in the spring, you know, the Thursday-Sunday rotation for them, which has been pretty familiar for Spurs fans.
Yeah.
But something that I think at this point in time under Mauricio Pochettino, they expect more. They expect to get to those knockout round stages, and it's I just love the way that this group sets up.
Yeah, and I mean, what you're saying there about Pochettino and stuff, and I think this year's a bit of a... I know that he's going to be given a bit of grace and stuff because they're moving into the new stadium, and they didn't have any money to spend in that last transfer. I think they're the first team in history of the Premier League that hasn't spent a dime when it came to a transfer window, but I think they need to win something. I think the Spurs need to win something. I mean, they've been progressively getting better each year. As each year's went on, they've been getting that bit better. But now they haven't really got an excuse. They've got a world-class centre-forward. They've got a great team front to back, like Eriksen and stuff, Lloris. The whole span of their team, Alderweireld, and they have the goods. So it's just about producing now, really. And until they do, I suppose they're always going to have that monkey on their back. Like,
even if it's a League Cup or an FA Cup, some trophy wear that they can lift at the end of the season, you know, that that will mark the tangible progress of Tottenham. Because until now, as you point out, the personnel is there. Harry Kane, you know, I mean, leading the line. Lloris in the back, but Alderweireld, Sanchez. It's a very stout Vertonghen. It's a very stout defense. And then plenty of quality all over the field. Christian Eriksen, you name it. But until they make tangible gains, you know, in the trophy department, you know, the verdict will still be out for them, I think.
Absolutely. I agree. So, I mean, and I know Harry Kane's grew up and he's loved the club and all that, but, and I know they're paying him well, but if they don't win anything this year, Harry Kane's going to be thinking to himself, okay, look, I'm not getting any younger here. Right. I'm not winning anything. I'm probably the best centre forward in the world. If Real Madrid or someone comes calling, I can't see him sticking around, but that group will be interesting. Real Madrid will bring us on to the team who were expecting to obviously dominate that group, and it's Barcelona here at the top, as you said, joint with Inter Milan with 6 points. Have you been watching much of Barcelona recently?
I have, and you know, the Spanish La Liga has been an interesting one, hasn't it, in that it doesn't appear that anyone wants to win that league right now.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the top three dogs, traditionally at least, over the past 5-10 years in that league, and Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and Real Madrid all have gotten off to pedestrian starts domestically, but
yep.
Lionel Messi and Barcelona just have a way of turning it on in Europe. They've struggled, like I said, in Spain, but then they go to Wembley a few weeks ago and play Spurs off the pitch at times, and you're reminded that, yeah, this is still a team that should be considered one of the favorites to win the competition.
And you run it, I mean, it just gets to the point, we're running out of superlatives for Messi when you're watching him. I mean, it just seems like every time you're thinking, oh, well, he had a bit of a, because he didn't have a good World Cup. He didn't have a good World Cup, and the people were starting to say, oh, this is the start of the decline and stuff. which I was kind of annoying some of my friends because I always big up Ronaldo. And but then he just comes out and he's already got 11 goals this season, and you know, he's just ripping it up. He looks like he's operating at 100%. As I've marked it down here, I made sure to note that, because when he's on form, Barcelona are pretty much unstoppable.
Unplayable.
Do you want to do guesses of who we think are going to win each group as we go along, or who's going to go through and who's going to drop into Europa?
Let's do it.
So, who do you think's leading this group? Who do you think's going to go through?
Barcelona will finish top, for my money. And picking second in this group is maybe one of the tougher tasks we'll have all night. I am actually going to go with Inter Milan.
Really?
I like the quality they have in that team. I think Mauro Icardi is an underrated center forward. Ivan Perisic, obviously, we saw what he was capable of at the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Gotten a good defense that has gotten a bit younger over the past few years. I think this two-game set that they have with Barcelona is massive. If they can somehow emerge with either a point or 3 points from those two games,
mm-hmm.
I think they still might have enough, maybe get a result in London on their return trip to Tottenham. I think they can ultimately emerge second and leave Spurs for third.
Spurs for third. So PSV dropping out then?
Yeah.
I would... See, I'm tempted to throw Spurs in to go through, because I think Spurs are better than Inter Milan, but just Inter Milan have started so much better. Like, they're already sitting on 6 points, Tottenham are on zip. So that's a big... Psychologically as well, that would be pretty hard to come over. So I'd probably back in that Barcelona, Inter, Spurs third, and PSV going out as fourth. So it'll be interesting to see what way that that group pans out. Is there any other groups that jump out to you here?
Well, there are a few, right? I mean, Group B was kind of the heavyweight. I'd say the other one that I'm most compelled by would be Group C.
Group C?
Yes, sir.
So that's group of Napoli, Liverpool, PSG, and Red Star Belgrade.
Yeah.
So currently sitting on the top is Napoli, obviously, 4 points. Their first game in Belgrade, they drew, and then they got a win against Liverpool, one of the worst games I've seen in a while. They are still sitting second behind Juventus in Serie A, which, I mean, it's no tall task to beat out Juventus, because they are firing on all cylinders at the minute. The next game they have is PSG away. If they can get anything from that, that would be them sitting at 5 points at the top. It'll be hard to see anybody coming back. But what do you think about this group?
I look at PSG as one of the most fascinating teams in this tournament, and I say that for maybe a reason that most people wouldn't quite expect. I don't think any team is under more pressure to perform well and win this competition than PSG. You look at Thomas Tuchel, a great manager, but he's taking over for Unai Emery,
yeah,
who won two straight domestic trebles in France,
mm-hmm.
still somehow managed to get let go.
Yeah.
So that tells me that for PSG, a team that has been elevated by an extremely wealthy ownership group and really transformed itself into a world power over the past 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
The UEFA Champions League is absolutely everything for them.
Well, that's it. They need it. I mean, they have, as you said, they have everything else. They have all the bells and all the whistles. They have millions of pounds coming out, wherever, paying for all sorts of big names, massive names on the planet in the world of soccer. And, I mean, the French League, you're never really going to get much adulation for winning the French League,
sure.
just because... It's not one of the traditional stronger leagues, but they have been fascinating. But I think you're right, and that is fascinating. That's true. They're probably on the most under pressure team.
I think they're the most under pressure team in this tournament. I completely believe that. The expectations are there, and I think it's an extremely tough task for Tuchel, especially when you look at this group. It's not inconceivable. I mean, I ultimately fancy PSG to go through, and we can talk about that in a minute, but it's not inconceivable to say, okay, Napoli and Liverpool take the first two spots, leave PSG out in Europa League, and who knows what that would do for Tuchel and that club, you know, over the next year or so, no matter how dominant they are in Liga.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, if they go out in the group stages, I couldn't even see Tuchel holding on for the rest of the year, because they're out for blood. Like, they want that coveted Champions League. I mean, they've never won it. So, but they're writing all these checks, and you're asking, can they cash the checks? They've got Neymar, Mbappe, Cavani.
Yeah, so much quality.
They have a very good chance of winning this tournament, I will say that. But they haven't started great. They haven't started great in the Champions League. They've been amazing, obviously, in France. And they're stacked with quality. They've already basically won the French League. I mean, nobody's going to catch them. Neymar's already scored 11 and Mbappe scored 10. So they're flying. They are firing on all cylinders. Obviously, they haven't really started that well in the Champions League, but It's a tough group too, because they've got Liverpool there, the last year's finalists, and then Belgrade. I don't think we really expect Belgrade to do much. But Liverpool have had a bit of a fascinating start to the league. What have you made of that?
Well, start to the Premier League, I mean, they looked fantastic, I must say. And it was kind of a continuation of some of their brightest moments from 2017-2018 when Salah and Firmino and Sané, you know, that front three firing on all cylinders. Yep. But they hit kind of a blip at the end of September, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Went three or four games without a win in all competitions. And you just start to wonder, is this a Liverpool team that maybe has the depth to make another Champions League run while at the same time keeping pace with Manchester City in the Premier League? I think that's a tough task. And don't get me wrong, this is a Liverpool team that I think extremely high of. I haven't thought as highly of a Liverpool side in as long as I can remember. I think Jurgen Klopp has done a tremendous job with this team.
And the additions this year as well that he has brought in, Naby Keita. I mean, because I think they all kind of took us by surprise at the end of last year, because they kind of just came into form around January.
Yep, you
and
bet.
They took off. I mean, it was obviously already they were too far behind City because they were running away with the league. But they took off and they got a couple of favourable results, and they were going out to places in Europe and dominating teams away from home and good sides too. So they made it to the final, and then he's added this next cavalry of players, the likes of Keita and stuff. But I've just been looking there. Their last win, Liverpool's last win, was on the 22nd of September against Southampton. They won 3-0 at Anfield, and then they were beat. They had the doubleheader against Chelsea in the Carling Cup, and then they were beat at home. Chelsea, Eden Hazard scored that great goal. They then drew away at Stamford Bridge, and then they were beaten by Napoli at home, as we were saying. That Saturday was the 0-0 draw with City, and that's the last game they played. So they have Huddersfield here this Saturday. So look, they'll be looking to get back to winning ways. But as you're saying, they have hit a bit of a purple patch, and we haven't really seen them. It'll be interesting to see how they react to it, because we've never really seen Klopp under this sort of pressure, you know?
Right. I completely agree. And I think Liverpool right now, going into this double fixture with Red Star Belgrade, I think you would expect them to take maximum points,
yeah, it has to be
all
six points. Yeah.
Across those two fixtures, which you would think sets them up pretty favorably going into those final two match days against PSG and Napoli, respectively.
Well, especially because PSG and Napoli will be playing, they'll be taking points off each other anyway. So
it's kind of
a win-win there for Liverpool. Yeah, I mean, I suppose we might as well talk about Belgrade. They are not that we expect them to do much. Like, they are dominant still in Serbia. They're still top of the league. They're still top of the Serbian league. They're bottom of this group, and I suppose that's where we'll probably see them end up.
I think it's where we'll see them end up, although it's not an easy place to play. We saw Napoli go in there and they failed to score and ended up in a 0-0 draw on the first match day. So, you know, it's a fascinating group. I really, really like Liverpool and PSG on paper, but I think you look at this Napoli team under Carlo Ancelotti, a very experienced head coach and a coach who has plenty of success, not only domestically, but in this competition we saw with AC Milan years back.
Yep.
I think they're capable of throwing a wrench in this for either PSG or more likely Liverpool, but I would still, at the end of the day, fancy PSG and Liverpool to go through, although it will be close, and I love this group. I really do.
I think so too, and I mean, if Liverpool do go out and get 6 points, if they do go and get these 6 points, that'll be very good for morale, and that'll also, I think, knock Napoli as well, because I can't see Napoli beating PSG.
Right.
PSG, I mean, home or away, PSG are just stacked. So, if Liverpool go away to Serbia, get 3 points, play them at Anfield, get 3 points, I can see Liverpool go through. But if it keeps going the way it's going here, I think PSG are definitely going through. I think PSG are going through in first place.
Yep.
between Napoli and Liverpool, though, I don't know. I mean, is it conceivable that we could see last year's finalists drop into the Europa League?
It is conceivable, because when you look at what Napoli was able to do in that dire game that you alluded to against Liverpool, in match day two, nicking that win in second half stoppage time. Such a massive result for them down there in Italy, because now they can go back and potentially put themselves in a position going into the final match day, group stage match day in December, of going to Anfield. Maybe they need a draw in that game. Maybe they need a win. And however unlikely that may be, this is a Napoli side that at least has the quality to get it done if they put their best foot forward.
So if we're putting our neck on the line then, we're sending PSG through top as group winners?
Yes.
And who you have in second?
Liverpool will squeak by. I think it will come down to that final group stage game against Napoli at Anfield. Liverpool may have to win it. They may have to get a point. I think they will do just enough.
And you think Napoli into the Europa League then, and Belgrade, wooden spoon, going home?
Wooden spoon.
Yeah. I would agree. I mean, PSG are just, as we've already said, they just have so much talent. I can't really see them not. And they're doing so well in the French League and stuff. I can't really see them going out. But, yep. On to, let's see, one of the supposed less attractive groups. What about Group D? So that's Porto, Schalke, Galatasaray, and Lokomotiv Moscow. I mean, that's not the most interesting group. But Porto and Schalke are both tied at the top of 4 points. They drew 1-1 in the first game, but Schalke have not been. Schalke have been nowhere near a shadow of the team that they were last year. Really, yeah, they've been so bad this year. They're currently sitting 15th in the Bundesliga, and they've already lost 5 games this season. They've been playing a bit better recently, and they actually got a win in Moscow in the last game. So it looks like they could sort of be starting to figure it out there. But I mean, it's the jury's still out, because like they were dreadful at the start of this year in the Bundesliga.
When I look at Group D here, Porto, Schalke, Galatasaray, and Lokomotiv Moscow, Schalke is by far, for me, the most compelling team right now. Just in how slow a start they got off to in Bundesliga. They were very good last year, finished second in Bundesliga, and they have followed it up with a huge hangover. And what they might be able to do, though, is kind of use this competition as a springboard to get themselves on the right track, because the quality is there. And obviously, as an American soccer man myself, I'm always keeping a close eye on Weston McKennie, the 20-year-old Texan who actually scored the winner in that game against Moscow, I do believe. And so, looking for his development.
It was like injury time or something,
yeah,
wasn't it? It was towards the end of the game,
a header. So a huge result for Schalke in what has otherwise been a very forgettable campaign for them so far. So if they can kind of use this competition as a springboard to get them back on track, when you look at Group D, like you said, there's nothing that really stands out. You know, it's a rather pedestrian group at the end of the day. So if Schalke can get top two, you know, secure a spot in the round of 16. Going into next spring, I think it puts them at a decent spot to maybe make something out of this season.
Yeah, and the other team, yeah, I would agree with that. And as what you were saying, that really can help if Schalke can go away and get a big win. Say they go to Portugal or to Turkey or whatever, and they get a big win, that can lift morale, and that can, you know, winning becomes a habit. You go in next week, you go into the Bundesliga, they're all full of the joys of spring.
Exactly.
Porto they're sitting second in domestically, but they're top of the group. So with Schalke, obviously, domestically they're kind of the best of the rest in Portugal again this year. Benfica leading the pack, and they're just trailing behind. I think it's Braga's in there as well. Actually, Braga and I think they're sitting third. Porto were sitting third in the league. They travel away to Moscow, which is notoriously a really tough place to be. Anywhere in Russia.
Of course.
Especially this time of year, too.
Oh, brutal. I
mean, you're going to be going to sub-zero temperatures, playing against a team who are good enough to get into the Champions League. So it'll be interesting to see what way they sort of attack that game, what way they set up and stuff, because you go out there, I mean, looking at Lokomotiv Moscow on paper, a lot of teams in this Champions League in general would be looking at that saying, do you know what, they're not a great side on paper, we could go there and do a bit of damage. But sometimes you find out you go to Russia and it doesn't work out that way.
Well, look at what you have to do. Look at what that requires if you're Porto. You are flying from Western Europe, the edge of Western Europe, all the way to Eastern Europe. The temperatures you're going to be playing in, if we're talking Fahrenheit, you're going from 60, 70 degrees to anywhere from 0 to 20 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing a game in which the city you're playing in, you're maybe 2 or 3 or 4 hours time difference. So for the players, any trip to Moscow or St. Petersburg, you name it, it's going to be an absolute battle.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about the experience is going to be easy. Sometimes we see these Russian teams get played off the pitch when they go on the road in Champions League or Europa League, but very rarely do you see a team come into Russia and have an easy time. So Lokomotiv Moscow, while I would not put money on them to emerge from this group, I do think they have the opportunity to kind of play a spoiler role here.
Mm-hmm, definitely. One sort of silver lining that those teams can look at is that Lokomotiv have been doing so poorly in the league. I think they're sort of, like, it's kind of a running theme in some of the teams in some of the groups here, that they're suffering a bit of a hangover from last year.
Yes.
You know, they put a lot of things into last year, and then with the World Cup and stuff, players aren't getting as much rest as they usually would in other seasons. So they are they're last in the group, haven't got a point. They're sitting seventh in the Russian league, and they were beat 3-0 a couple of weeks ago there by the league leader Zenit, who seemed to be running away in Russia. So that is one silver lining about going there. One of the teams that will have to go there is Galatasaray, though. What do you know about Galatasaray?
Great team in Turkey, consistently one of the better teams in that league, and you know they've got a very interesting 2-game set coming up here with Schalke, home and away. And I think whoever gets the better of those two matches can end up joining Porto in the knockout stage with the team that maybe falls up short, trapping down to Europa.
Mm-hmm. That is, Galatasaray is known as kind of a horrendous place to go and play.
Oh,
it's kind of the same.
Extremely difficult, extremely hostile.
Mm-hmm.
The crowds are there. Is that one of the teams from Istanbul?
Yep, that's it. Fenerbahce and Galatasaray. And, I mean, they have, over the years, they've made some giant killings at home. Like, I remember they beat Man United 1 year. I think Man United were the reigning champions, 99, going into 2000, I believe. And they went there and, God, it was hell. Like, it was welcome to hell was what they were greeted with. I believe it was definitely the end of the 90s, and United were big, big favourites going in. And the game was spoiled just by the supporters, really, just because they're so fanatical out there. It's crazy. So if they get a team, and that, especially if a big team's coming in and they're not on a good day, that noise can put a bit of fright in the end. You know, next thing you could be leaving with no points.
Without question, Galatasaray probably boasting one of the biggest home field advantages in this tournament. And we all look. I mean, Galatasaray, you wouldn't rank them probably in the top 10 in terms of, you safely would not rank them in the top 10 of best clubs in this tournament right now, but as we've said, that home field advantage can certainly go a long way. And I think it's more, look, we can go group by group and talk about the Anfields, you know, the Old Traffords,
mm-hmm.
Camp Nou, you name it. Those are different places to play. They aren't quite as hostile.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel the hate
mm-hmm.
quite like you do going to Istanbul. So that certainly is a wild card. You make a good point there.
So what do we think then about top two, Europa League and Wooden Spoon?
I'm going to give the Wooden Spoon to Lokomotiv Moscow.
Yep, they're gone.
Yeah, this is a very tough one. My heart kind of wants Schalke here, quite honestly, with mm-hmm. Weston McKennie in the side.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them go through, but I'm actually going to go with Porto and Galatasaray. You've kind of convinced me. I'm kind of thinking about this right now, and Galatasaray, tough place to play. I think, again, this 2-game set with Schalke is massive. I think if either of those teams can get 4 points, they're in excellent shape.
Yeah.
But maybe even a split might end up favoring Galatasaray.
So you're having Galatasaray, Porto, and then Schalke dropping into Europa. I would say, I think Porto will go through, definitely. I think Schalke will have enough. I think they'll just have more quality than Galatasaray. Right. I know that Galatasaray, I mean, it will be very, very tough to play there. But I think they'll get third, and I think Moscow will go. But, I mean, we'll see. Group A. Now, Group A is... It's one of the better groups as well. I think it's one of the more attractive groups. It is Borussia Dortmund, Atletico Madrid, Monaco and Bruges. Club Bruges. Dortmund, obviously, are leading the pack. They're the ones that look... They look untouchable, especially in the Bundesliga at the minute. I don't think they've been beat domestically at all.
They have not lost yet. No, yeah. They're looking terrific.
Yeah, they're looking down at everyone. Like they're sitting atop the Bundesliga at the minute. What do you think about this group? What's jumping out at you?
Well, obviously, I'll be keeping my eye on Christian Pulisic for as long as he plays professional football.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
is he hurt at the minute?
He is. He's got a calf injury.
Right.
But he's expected to be back within the next week or two.
Right. Right.
So it's nothing long term. Look for him to maybe ease back into a squad that is performing much better right now under head coach Lucien Favre than we could have even imagined at the beginning of the year. Look, it's great that this team is at the top of the table, but I just love watching them play. This is a team, you know, every Saturday or Sunday must-watch stuff on FS1 or FS2, Bundesliga, the Spaniard Paco Alcácer, and
yep.
He's rolling. The 18-year-old English wonder kid, Jadon Sancho, has come on and made a bigger impact than we could have expected. Axel Witsel has given them a bit more of a bite in the midfield,
yep.
Something that they maybe were lacking
missing
the last
a bit, yeah.
few years when they finished well below Bayern Munich
yep.
in Bundesliga. So this is a team in Dortmund that I absolutely love to watch, and I looking at this group, I would pick them as one of the two teams to go through. I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't argue with that at all. Dortmund have looked fantastic. Every time I've seen them this year, they've never looked off. I mean, they look like they're firing at all cylinders, a well-oiled machine, and he's got them playing some nice stuff as well, as you're saying, some of the additions brought in with Axel Witsel and stuff. And Jadon Sancho is a bit of a... See, we're starting to see a bit of a trend now where... Young English players aren't really getting... If they're not getting into the top Premier League clubs, they're seeing the likes of Germany and Holland and
it's
some of these
places. It's not necessarily alone to say a Southampton.
Well, that's it.
Right?
And they're going away. And they're getting... And I've made the same argument with Pulisic as well, because a lot of people have been asking me about... I mean, why doesn't he just go to the Premier League? Why isn't he playing for one of the big clubs in England or in Spain or whatever? I mean, Dortmund, they're a massive club in their own respect. But people have been... They're maybe not in that higher... echelons of renowned clubs around the world, and people have been kind of saying, I mean, it's more just sort of moderate fans of soccer here who have heard the hype about Pulisic and they've just been, but I think him staying at Dortmund, I think that's honestly the best place for him, because how old is he, 22?
He's 20 years old.
20? He's still 20. So, I mean, he has forever to mature. Like, he could stay playing top class football at the top of Germany and then go wherever. I mean, the world's his oyster. Gets to 23, 24 and he has the guts of 5 years' experience under his belt at the very top. So, Jadon Sancho has went and done the same. And a player from, I mean, he's not English, but he played in Arsenal's. He just couldn't get into the Arsenal team. Serge Gnabry.
Of course.
And he went to Germany. I think he went, was it Hoffenheim he went to first originally? It was one of those, it was Hoffenheim or Schalke.
It was Hoffenheim, absolutely.
And now he's at Munich.
Yep.
Ripping it out. And he looks like, I mean... What Arsenal would do for a player like that now, like, you know?
Unquestionably.
So, it seems to be a bit of a trend, and it's one that I think is welcome, you know, because all these English players especially who are getting to that point and they're just not quite, they're on the cusp of the first team squad, but they're just not quite there. This is an indispensable experience for them, and I think Pulisic's the exact same. Another club, Monaco, they haven't looked well, but, I mean, they've been in the news recently. They've just appointed Thierry Henry as manager. What do you think of Monaco?
Well, I think the first responsibility for Thierry Henry as manager will be to dig them out of the bottom league. Right now is where they find themselves. I believe 18th through 8 matches played. 1 win, 5 losses, 3 draws. So a pretty horrific start to the domestic campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But look, it's a big opportunity to respond in the Champions League with this double... fixture coming up against Bruges in Group A. If they can take 6 points from those two games, I mean, this Monaco team is not too far removed from that Liga and winning campaign in 2016-17 when they had Kylian Mbappe, breaking out for them. You know, you look at the team now, Radamel Falcao, the Belgian, Yuri Tielemans, the young lad there. So plenty of bright spots in this team. And if, look, Thierry Henry, you talk about making a big name hire for manager, you don't get really much more bigger name than that.
And he was in demand, too. I mean, he was the assistant manager of Belgium at the World Cup under Roberto Martinez. But every sort of available job that's been coming up around, his name's been thrown around, which actually kind of surprised me, because I know some clubs just want to go for the big name because it's attractive. I mean, it's the big brights. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than Thierry Henry in the world of football. So, but there must be something there, because a big club like Monaco does not just hire someone on a whim.
You'd hope there's something there. I mean, Thierry Henry did develop at Monaco during his youth career, but he has zero head coaching experience, you know, as a big name top flight manager. So this is a huge test for him. We'll see how things pan out. I think the fixture list has been kind of favorable to him in that, again, he's got Club Brugge twice in a row here.
Two massive games if they have any sort of chance of going through.
I think they absolutely need to win both of those if they want to even have a shot at catching either Dortmund or Atletico Madrid here.
Mm-hmm. And as you were saying, he does have a lot of talent to work with. And how often have we seen a team sort of going through the motions, not really playing for their coach or whatever? Next thing, a new hire comes in, new coach, it lifts the squad. They start, looks like they all have a smile on their face. They're playing better out there. So we've seen that happen. That could certainly happen here. But as you said, they have their work cut out for them because they have Atletico and Dortmund ahead of them.
Correct. I would expect that uptick to unfold in Liga. I'm not sure if it'll be enough to rescue them in what I think is maybe an underrated group here.
Speaking of Atletico, as you said, they haven't really, I mean, they've been okay. They've been one of the teams at the top of La Liga that you've been thinking, they're not really firing on all cylinders at the minute. They're not playing to their capabilities. They're still there and thereabouts. They're sitting third in La Liga. Just they're in and around there with, I mean, where you always expect them to be, but they can really do some damage if they start playing the way we know that they can.
Well, we've seen them make a few finals here, right, in this competition, 2014 and 2016, losing to their cross city neighbors Real Madrid on both occasions. But as you alluded to, they haven't quite gotten into full gear in La Liga. Having said that, they're probably going to be pleased with the fact that they're, you know, second or third right now, considering that they have started slowly.
Yep.
They haven't really been punished by Barcelona or Real Madrid in the process. Sevilla right now, I believe, is the first place team.
Yeah, they're
right
leading
now
the pack
in Spain,
yep.
Which is somewhat remarkable. Having said all that, this is still an Atletico team that I like a lot under Diego Simeone. One of the toughest teams consistently in Europe. One of the toughest teams to beat. One of the toughest teams to break down, with the likes of Diego Godin and Juan Fran and Felipe Luis in the back. So organized, and you know, they're one of those teams that will not necessarily play you off the pitch, although they did invest a pretty decent amount this summer in some new players. Just a team that is so disciplined, and you're going to have to beat them. They're never going to beat themselves.
Absolutely not, and that is so true. One thing that, like, but when you think about it, see, when you have money, when the money comes into it, like, when you look at the money aspect, Atletico shouldn't be anywhere near Real Madrid or Barcelona.
No.
Shouldn't be anywhere near them. But they have quality in their squad. They buy well. They always invest well. They always find strikers. I mean, they always find quality strikers. I mean, if it's Torres or Aguero or Falcao, they always have a quality striker. Now, Griezmann.
Diego Costa's back.
And they are... See, the thing about them, they can win. They know how to win. If they know they have to sit and defend and then catch you on the counter, that's what they're going to do. Diego Simeone is just, he's so practical the way he goes about things. He doesn't have a one size fits all approach. He's not going to play every team the way he wants to play. He's going to see how he can manipulate the team that he's playing and hit them where it hurts. And as you said, they've made a couple of finals over the last couple of years. And it's because of that. I think it's because the grit that they show, because they can be a nasty side.
They
can
really
be a nasty team to play, you know, especially with the likes of Costa. I mean, you're not going to get away with him. He's going to be baiting and scrubbing and nipping
absolutely
and kicking.
Nothing
and,
comfortable.
You know, that's it. Not that, make it so uncomfortable for the opponents. So,
yeah.
I can definitely see Atletico going through in this group. Monaco could pose a bit of a problem the later the group goes on if they do get a couple of favourable wins here against Club Bruges, who I suppose we're expecting to drop out. Yeah,
Wooden Spoon.
Bruges are sitting. They're sitting second in the Belgian league at the minute, just behind Genk. But I mean, it's a different. Bruges are a good side. They're not a bad side at all, actually. Like, but when it comes up to, it's a step above, really, when you think about the likes of Monaco, Dortmund, and Atletico, isn't it? This one's going to be hard to call. This who we think's going through and who we think's going out.
It really is, and I'm so fascinated by the clash of styles between who I think are the two best teams in this group, in Dortmund and Atletico.
Mm-hmm.
And when these two teams go head-to-head, I'm ultimately going to expect Atletico to get the better of the battle.
Right.
I like the experience that they have in this competition. The fact that they are so staunch in the back. I like them to be able to, you know, somewhat pacify a Dortmund side that doesn't have nearly as much experience in the competition, although you do love the likes of Marco Reus, you know, bring plenty of class to the team.
And he looks like he's back to form too.
He certainly does, yes, I completely agree. But at the end of the day, I will go with Atletico first, Dortmund second.
Atletico first, Dortmund second, and Monaco dropping into the Europa. The one thing that could throw a bit of a spanner in the works is Dortmund actually have the home game here first, so it's going to be in Dortmund, which, I mean, I don't think Atletico care about where they're playing, really. It's always going to be a home field advantage. I mean, they're going to have their home field advantage if they play at home, but they're one of those teams that they can go away and they don't care. They'll sit back for 85 minutes and they'll defend, and they can defend. Diego Godin is probably the best reader of the game out there. They can defend and they'll soak it up and soak it up and soak it up, and then they'll hit you on the break because they have so much quality going for Saul, Griezmann, Costa, as we've said. So I think you're right. I think it'll be Dortmund, Atletico, obviously, Monaco dropping in, and Club Brugge. I'll be interested to see who wins that group, to be honest, between Dortmund and Monaco, because obviously they get the more favourable draw if you finish top. But that's four groups anyway. We'll take a wee bit of a time out here, and we'll come back with the next four. You're listening to the Independent Republic of Soccer on Sports Radio with 10WHB.
Kansas City's hometown sports station, Sports Radio 810WHB.
Hello and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Soccer. I'm Connell McCourt, coming to you live from the Sports Radio 810WHB studios. I'm live here with Sam Kovsen of Sporting Kansas City, and we're talking through the Champions League, the UEFA Champions League. We've already done groups A to D there in the bank, E, F, G, and H to go. I suppose we might as well start at E then, Group E. Group E is Ajax, Bayern Munich, Benfica, and AEK Athens. Ajax and Bayern obviously both on top with 4 points, similar as we've seen in previous groups. They've both won one and drawn one. They actually drew with each other in the last match day, 1-1. What sort of jumps out to you about this? Where would you like to start?
Well, at the beginning of the tournament, I would have backed Bayern to win this group going away, mm-hmm, without any problems at all. But when we look at the season that this team has had, it's pretty eye-opening. I think there is tremendous pressure on head coach Niko Kovac right now,
yep,
to turn things around. You get the feeling that he'd get the sack sometime before the new year if results don't improve, especially in Bundesliga, where they're several points behind Dortmund right,
yep,
now.
Yeah, I think they're in fifth or sixth.
Such a stark departure from the norm and what we're used to seeing from Bayern Munich.
And especially recently, too. It hasn't even just been from the start of the. They actually started okay. They had a couple of good results at the start of the season, but the last couple of weeks, they were beat at home in the last game by Mönchengladbach, 3-0. The game before that, they were beat 2-0 by Hertha Berlin. So, and Hertha are doing well this year, to be fair, too. But, I mean, it's not, we don't recognize this Bayern Munich team, do we?
No, we don't. And you make a fair point, Connell, that I think some other teams have stepped up to the plate and really improved in the Bundesliga, namely Hertha Berlin and Dortmund. So, you know, the last six seasons, I think, we've seen Bayern Munich win the league title every single year. And
mm-hmm,
quite frankly, it hasn't really been all that close in most of those years. But now, you know, with a handful of German sides upping their game, and I think Bayern Munich maybe taking a step down. You know, hard to know at this point in time. We've got to remind ourselves, right, that we're still only 20% or so through this 18-19 season. So the verdict is still out. But again, Niko Kovac, manager for Bayern Munich right now, under tons of pressure.
Under serious pressure. And I mean, the one saving grace, I think, for him is who do you bring in? If you fire him, who do you bring in?
Exactly.
All the big coaches have jobs. I mean, I know people are talking about Julian Nagelsmann. But I think he's already guaranteed to go somewhere else.
He's with Hoffenheim right now.
Yeah, he is.
But he's been assured of going to Leipzig, I do believe.
Is it Leipzig? It could be. Yeah, you could be right. We'll check that, actually. But that's insane. You're looking around, and he's a youngster coming up too. Like, he's one of the younger, I think he's like 31 or 32. I think he's one of the youngest coaches in Bundesliga. So there's been a lot of talk about him. But other than that, Carlo Ancelotti, they fired. And Pep Guardiola's not going to go back. He's sitting at City. Mourinho, I mean, would they want him back at the minute, the way United's going? It's slim pickings out there. Like, because Bayern Munich aren't going to, I mean, they want the cream of the crop, because they see themselves along with the best, the cream of the crop in this tournament, the Real Madrids, the Barcelonas. They want to be in there competing, because not so long ago we were talking about them as being champions and finalists, and it's just sort of, they've kind of fallen away this year. I think it's also, they have a bit of an aging squad as well. I mean, Ribery's 35, probably Robin's probably 35.
That's a great point. Ribery and Robin are two players who are in their mid-30s, and they're getting frequent playing time.
Yep.
They are starters for this Bayern Munich team, which kind of unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it is indeed.
I mean, to see a world powerhouse like Bayern Munich fielding players, and don't get me wrong, you know, these are two guys who will go down as legends, you know, and Robin and Ribery.
Absolutely.
But the fact that they're still getting minutes makes you wonder, like, what direction are they moving right now?
Yeah, I mean, and they seem to be going backwards, really. Like, it's just from where they have been, whether they can turn it around and sort of, and I'm sure they'll be there and thereabouts towards the end of the year, but this Dortmund team are looking good in the Bundesliga, and I think Bayern might be looking over their shoulder, just worrying about who's coming up, because as you said, other teams have stepped up to the plate as well. It's not just Dortmund. You see the likes of Hertha Berlin, Hoffenheim's are showing up, you know, and it's getting more frequent that these types of teams are playing. So Bayern, they are at the top of the group. They haven't been doing well, but I mean, what? I suppose we have to see them going through, don't we, really?
I'm not going to pick against them. We say all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm not going to pick against them. I do think this is has turned out to be a somewhat favorable draw for them with Ajax, Benfica, and AEK Athens in this group. I think you would expect Bayern to get back on track, at least in this competition over the next few weeks. They've got Athens twice, home and away. So you'd expect them to take the full 6 points there. And just to clear up, Julian Nagelsmann has agreed to become Rebel Leipzig's head coach starting in 2019.
Okay.
A bizarre arrangement.
Yeah.
How do you buy into a manager if you know he's gone at the end of the season? Just a very unusual.
Who are you impressing?
Yeah.
So, I mean, who are you trying to impress? I understand.
And the same goes for Leipzig.
You know,
to a lesser extent, right?
Yeah.
Because you can make the argument, I'm going to try to make a good impression here and show Nagelsmann that I deserve to be in his plans when he gets here, but it is a bizarre situation and one that I certainly haven't seen before, especially at least in a top flight league such as Bundesliga.
And they'll be playing against each other.
Right.
I mean, they're
going
to play
so
against
bizarre.
Each other twice this year. So when Schalke or sorry when Leipzig go to Hoffenheim, and vice versa, what way do their Leipzig fans react to Nagelsmann? Because it's going to be their coach.
Correct.
I mean, what is
the fan complexion? And if you look at these two clubs, Hoffenheim and Leipzig, if one team is pushing for a European spot, is there a real legitimate incentive for Nagelsmann to get a result in what might impact
his
future
team?
Standing, whether they're maybe pushing for Champions League or Europa League, it's bizarre.
It's very strange indeed. I mean, obviously, they're hoping and they're expecting just professionals to be professional and
just
play, you know. But it would be very, very easy to rest on your laurels, you know, and sort of, I don't care, I'm out of here at the end of the year, goodbye type thing. But hopefully that doesn't happen. But it'll be fascinating to see whatever way it works out anyway. In this group, though, I suppose we'll have Bayern, Ajax. What do you think about them?
Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, a consistently performing professional. Dusan Tadic, another guy who I like on that team. Hosting Benfica in match day 3. I think if they can get a win there, they are in actually very good shape to advance to the knockout rounds. This Ajax team, a team that has over the years consistently produced some of the best young talent, you know, in the world.
Mm-hmm. And they just got a couple of players, but I mean, they got they got Daley Blind back, but from Man United and stuff. They've strengthened as well in the offseason.
I think if they can get, so they've got Benfica home and away here over the next 2 match days. If they can get 4 points there, that may be a bit of a tall task. Benfica's never an easy out, especially out in Portugal. But if they can somehow maneuver 4 points from that stretch, I actually fancy them to go through. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, and as you're saying, it's a pretty tall task because Benfica are doing so well domestically. They're kind of the same as the likes of, cut from the same cloth as the PSGs and stuff in the tournament, in that domestically they just reign supreme. And it's probably a bit harsh to say that on Benfica because the Portuguese league, they have a couple of decent teams. It's like Sporting Lisbon, Porto and stuff. So there's teams around there, Braga, who are putting pressure on, but Benfica always seem to be leading the way. They did get an impressive win away to AEK, which I think will help them because no matter what, a win away in Europe is tough to come by. AEK, their bottom was 0 points. They have to be going out, like, don't they?
Yeah, I think they ultimately get the wooden spoon, although they've kind of got, to a lesser extent, a little bit of a Lokomotiv Moscow aspect to them, and that they will not be an easy out at home. That's not an easy trip by any means down there to Athens. We actually saw Sporting Kansas City forward Christian Namath travel down to Athens with the Hungary national team this week, and they lost 1-0. Christian Namath came off the bench in that game. So, again, traveling down south to Greece, it's uncomfortable. It's never going to be an easy 3 points by any stretch of the imagination. But, again, there's just a consistency to Benfica to where you can always kind of somehow pencil them into the round of 16. They may not get much further than that, but you can pretty consistently bet that they will propel themselves into the knockout rounds. And for me, I'll let you share your thoughts here, but between Ajax and Benfica, it's not an easy choice.
Definitely not. I mean, I suppose we can do away with AEK. They're on last points. I can see them. They actually, I mean, they should have got a result in the last game, the Benfica game. I watched the game, and they have a striker, Clonaritis. He actually scored 2. But the last minute of the game, a minute to go of normal time, and he's in one-on-one, and he has a striker coming up behind him, just backing him up. All he needs to do is score it, and it's 3-2, and the game's over, because Benfica are down to 10 men at this point. And he shoots, keeper saves it, ball goes back up the edge of the pitch, and Benfica score and win it, and steal it. So, and it's when you step up into this tournament, the likes of AEK, who I suppose they do deserve to be here. They beat my team, Celtic, in the qualifying, which they got us at a... Celtic were the better team over 2 legs, honestly, but we didn't take our chances. We didn't deserve to be there. They got us at a strange time, too. It was just... we didn't have as much of a rest and all and whatever, but they had the same, so we can't really complain. We dropped into the Europa, and I don't think we'll be seeing them in the Europa because I think they're just going straight out. So, AEK gone, Bayern through, so it's Ajax and Benfica that we have to pick between.
It is.
I think Benfica will go through, honestly. Ajax are a good side. They're a young side, and they're currently sitting on top of the... or they're currently sitting at the top of the group with Bayern, so it'll be interesting to see this one, actually, whatever way it works out. I just think Benfica will have too much quality for them, and I think Benfica are capable of winning away, whereas a young Ajax team, I'm not really sure. What do you think?
To make things interesting, I'll disagree, and I'll go with Ajax finishing second.
Right.
Having said that, I'm not confident in Ajax going to Portugal and getting a result.
Yeah.
I'm just not. which is why I think that they will need to get a victory in Amsterdam here in match day three. And if they can do that, and then maybe you go to Benfica, lose, okay, that's fine. You split the points at the end of the day with Benfica, and you can see, you know.
They're still sitting pretty, though. Yeah, I know what you mean.
You take maximum points against Athens, and then you've still got Bayern to account for later in the group stage. But I'll go with Ajax. I think they get it done at home.
Yeah.
Over Benfica.
Yep. Hard to argue with. Hard to argue with. Group F is Lyon, City, Shakhtar, and Hoffenheim, who we were just speaking of. Now, this is where it starts to get tough, because City should be, on paper, should be clear favourite to win this group. Hasn't really worked out that way, especially match day one, they were beat by Lyon at home. Lyon, I said in the first podcast that I've done of this, they're my dark horses, because I think they have the right mixture of youth and experience. They can score goals, they're decent at defending, and nobody's really talking about them. They're sort of flying under the radar, and they're one of those teams, I think. They took Moussa Dembele off my team, Celtic. He actually scored two in the last... he scored one, actually, in the last match day. They can score from nothing, and they can make things out of nothing. I'm not sure the other sort of squads, apart from City, have as much going forward. They are... they drew 2-2 with Shakhtar, and domestically, they've had a bit of a fall-off recently. They were chinned 5-0 last week by PSG, so they'll be looking to bounce back from that. City have just sort of... They've took off, or they've picked up where they left off last season. Have you been watching much of City this year?
I have, and again, irresistible stuff to watch. I mean, it's poetry in motion with what Pep Guardiola has going with that team. I would fancy them to edge Liverpool for the Premier League title and winning their second straight trophy in England. They haven't really made life easy on themselves in this competition at the start. Obviously, you mentioned losing at home to Lyon, and that was a prompt reminder of the quality that Lyon have in Diofakir and Memphis Depay, I guess. Yep. It would be two of the bigger names, but they've got a good squad from top to bottom. Manchester City, though, I would expect them... You know, if I'm a Manchester City supporter, I am disappointed if we don't reach the semifinals of this competition.
Definitely. I mean,
that has to be the
bare minimum.
Expectation. I think you look at this tournament as something that is entirely conceivable to win this season.
Yep, and it's also one that it's kind of the holy grail for Pep as well, because he didn't get this at Bayern Munich.
Yeah,
he won it at Barcelona, and look, I think he's the best manager out there. But there's a lot of people who hold that against him and say, well, he did it in a team that was pretty ready made.
Yep.
You know, he obviously had a lot to do with it behind the scenes from the under-21s and stuff coming up. But it would be hard to lose with that team that he had. You know, I mean, it's once in a lifetime that you get the likes of Messi surrounded by Iniesta and Xavi and David Villa over the years and Rakitic. Puyol, Piqué, you can just keep going on. Just a fantastic team. So it's kind of, I think Pep kind of still has that chip on his shoulder that he needs to win it he can go into a completely new setup and win it like he didn't do at Munich.
Pep has a chip on his shoulder, and I think Manchester City as a club has a chip on its shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing as the, you know, perpetual younger, the little brother of Manchester United.
Yep.
Throughout their entire history.
Yep.
And now over the last decade or so, they've emerged as a power in their own right. And we saw them absolutely play teams off the pitch last season, 100 points in the Premier League, you know, video game stuff.
Yeah, really. Irresistible stuff to watch. Like, yep.
When this team is clicking on all cylinders, and I think they'll only get better. You know, as the season goes on, we've got Kevin De Bruyne coming back from injury.
From injury, yeah. I mean, they don't even have De Bruyne. Like, it's
right.
Genuinely probably their best player.
Correct.
And they've been without him, and you wouldn't even know. Like,
they've got depth like no one else does, especially defensively and in midfield. I think losing a guy like Aguero might be tough, because I'm actually not sold that Gabriel Jesus is quite as world-class level.
Ooh,
as
controversial.
Sergio Aguero is, but so much to like about this Man City team, and I would actually fancy them to get things in order, atone for that home loss to Lyon, and ultimately finish atop the group.
They have two players, I think, that, well, three probably with De Bruyne coming back, that can, in my opinion, change a game at the drop of a hat. And it's David Silva. And this year, as much as, I mean, I never thought I would be saying this, Raheem Sterling. Raheem Sterling, speed kills. And that, ever since he left Liverpool, I mean, he was a great player at Liverpool. He'd done well at Liverpool. He left under a bit of a cloud. But he just seemed to have stepped up to a whole new level at City. Scored again tonight, two against Spain for England.
Twice, I believe.
Yeah, in that Nations Cup. Yeah. But what a win for England, 2-3-2 away in Spain.
In Spain, yeah.
So Sterling is just, and you can see that it's playing with those players, playing with the likes of De Bruyne, top world-class players every day in training. It's only made him a better player. So those types of players, David Silva as well, I mean, some of the stuff that he does, eye of the needle type stuff, like picking passes that I can't even see and I'm watching it on the TV and he's picking these passes, just unbelievable to watch. So
they've got fullbacks that just rampage down the sidelines.
They're midfielders, yeah. They're two midfielders.
They're afforded space because the midfield and the attack requires so much attention from the opponent. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the likes of Kyle Walker, Benjamin Mendy, guys who can absolutely just serve in a cross. And
even Delph, when he came in, when he was needed last year.
He was very effective.
Yeah.
Fabian Delph.
Yep.
Very effective. So it's just such a strong team. I think at the end of the day, it's a race for second. And I do like your dark horses, Lyon. I like that team as well.
The other teams, Hoffenheim, who we were just speaking of, Nagelsmann, Mr. I'm not going to be managing here next year. They were unlucky, I thought, in their first two games. I don't think they played. City got a late winner. They could have easily won that game.
Sure.
City always look dangerous because they have the players that can change a game at the drop of a hat. But they had chances. Hoffenheim had their chances and they couldn't take them. And that's probably why they're sitting so low in Germany. They're sitting 15th in Germany at the minute, which it's kind of... I don't know if there's ever been a Champions League where so many of the teams that are in the league are doing so badly domestically. Like, so... These are the teams who are at least the fourth best team in their country. And a lot of them this year just look like they're suffering such a hangover, Hoffenheim being one of them.
Schalke being the other. And the similarity there is that they are both from Germany. And I think when you look at Bundesliga in general over the last decade, with the exception of Bayern Munich's dominance, it's actually been a team that has had a fair amount of parity from spots 2 or 3 to 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the margin of error and the difference between maybe the second or third place team and the eighth or ninth place team isn't all that much. And it really comes down to just who is better managed, who has a bit more quality in the squad. And I think you have maybe two teams in Hoffenheim and Schalke whom, I don't know, I'm not going to go out there and say it definitively, but maybe they overachieved a little bit last year. Mm-hmm. And then every summer where there's a World Cup, it's always a weird turnaround going into the following domestic campaign because you've got this quick resumption to competitive games. You have a short preseason, and if players and teams it's a quick turnaround. You being a Celtic fan, although not a whole lot of Celtic players were involved in the World Cup.
Rub it in.
It's just it's a tough turnaround, and it's a quick turnaround.
So, especially for players trying to gel, and with players coming back from the World, especially players who went to the further stages of the World Cup.
Yes.
Celtic's Dedic Boyata went there, but I mean for Belgium, but he didn't play an awful lot towards the latter stages. But it's the likes of those players who have been all of June basically have been playing football. So when the league's starting back around August time, I mean, so you're in pre-season, middle of July.
They fit in a holiday.
It's not a long time off. Like, and just not even just physically, mentally, you need to switch off.
I think that's
they need
the biggest
to rest
thing,
and,
more so than physically.
Yeah, they're in the melting pot. There, the eyes of the world are on. The next thing, it's off for what, 4 weeks. Next thing, people are starting to talk about the Premier League starting back, Bundesliga starting back, everything start. So, you're right to mention that coming back off a World Cup year, Hoffenheim are one of the teams that just look like it's hitting them harder than most. The other team in that league is Shakhtar, or in that group, sorry, is Shakhtar Donetsk. They're sitting third at the minute. They've had two draws. Still, they're doing well domestically, still top of the Ukrainian league, which you would expect. They win that, I mean, at a canter nearly every year. I thought they were unlucky in the last game against Lyon. The game was played behind closed doors, for those who didn't see it, which was bizarre. I hate watching games that are behind closed doors. It just looks, something's off about it, you know? It just doesn't, it looks slower.
Eerie.
Yeah, it's eerie. And that was due to Lyon hooligans in the game before, in the first match day, I believe. They were fined by UEFA or whatever, made it to play a game behind closed doors. I think Hoffenheim could catch Shakhtar in this group. I mean, I know they have been, look, we're talking like there's only one game left, but they haven't looked good. Shakhtar have looked decent. There's an awful lot of football to be played, and these two teams especially could take points off each other.
It's a tough call at the end of the day, isn't it? Because Shakhtar always, you know, they always manage to find these Brazilians, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go,
I think there's some sort of association there with the club.
Yeah.
I think it's like they have sort of Brazilian owners, or it's something to do with, because you're right, they always have, like, it just seems like all these Brazilians that no one's heard of.
Oh,
next
it's a
thing,
rotating door. And yeah, they come in, they shine, you know, they help Shakhtar win the Ukrainian league by a million miles, and
mm-hmm.
they're sold off, you know, the likes of Willian and Douglas Costa maybe had come through there, and that's, I think we're maybe just scratching the surface of that list.
But. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's bizarre, because if you're a Brazilian, I mean, I've never grew up, I have a friend from Brazil. The first place I'm thinking of when I want to go to play soccer is not, oh, I heard Ukraine's really nice this time of year.
Precisely,
you know?
Right.
So you're right, they do, obviously they pay a lot, so they're one of those teams that actually Shakhtar play their home games about 100 miles away from their actual pitch.
Right.
Just due to, there's a bit of civil unrest or whatever going on in that part of Ukraine, so they have to play like 100 miles away, which is kind of weird as well.
Extremely.
In that, I mean, you don't really, do you ever have a home game? I mean, do they ever sort of have a, I mean, obviously there's Ukrainian fans there, but the Shakhtar fans are making something like a 200, 300 mile round trip to go to a home game.
Yeah, it's so tough. I would actually really like this Shakhtar team to make some more noise in this tournament if they had a genuine home field advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd really help them, similar to a Galatasaray, which we discussed in the previous segment. So I think looking at this group, Man City followed by Lyon, and then you said you like Hoffenheim. I think I might like Shakhtar to edge Hoffenheim, if only because Hoffenheim have been unconvincing.
They have, you're right. It's just, I'm thinking, they're one of those, Hoffenheim are one of those teams, I mean, maybe they did overachieve a bit last year, but that's not, over a full season, I don't think you can get lucky that many times. Do you know what I mean?
You are what you are.
That's it. It's different in the cup competitions, like a knockout competition. Sometimes you have a bad game, you get put out in the early rounds, but to maintain that level of consistency to stay in the top four, and especially in a tough league like Germany, tells me there's something there. There's something to do with the club. Now, whether the news of Nagelsmann taking off at the end of the year has affected them in some way, I'm not sure. Only the people inside the camp would know that, really. But I can see them at least pushing Shakhtar, but Shakhtar are doing what they need to do at the minute. They say 10 points brings you through in this group. I would say about 6 would get you Europa League, and with 2 draws already, Shakhtar aren't too far away. I mean, they're one win away from 5 points, and then it starts to look a bit tougher for Hoffenheim. But so you've probably convinced me. I would say Shakhtar probably Europa, Lyon and City. City should win that group, but I think Lyon could push them for.
That's true.
For
Man
top
City
spot.
Does have to travel to France.
Yep,
yeah.
They do, and they lost the home leg, so that's always going to be playing on the back. Whether that works the other way and Guardiola comes out and just smashes them, because they have a bit of a chip on their shoulder, send out a message type thing. But it'll be an interesting group to see whatever way that plays out. Group G is CSKA Moscow, Real Madrid, Roma, and Victoria Pilsen. Not the most attractive group, really. I mean, you see Real Madrid's and Roma, they're the two sort of mainstays. CSKA Moscow, they're actually sitting top of the table at the minute in this Champions League, because that shock they beat Real Madrid. I mean, Real Madrid have had a terrible time under Lopetegui since he's taken over. I say terrible time. They're still in the top four. They've only lost 2 or 3 games domestically. So, but they've, CSKA Moscow are just doing what they have to do. They got that 1-0 win against Real Madrid, and they got a point as well with Victoria Pilsen. They can score goals. They have that Russian striker Fedor Shalov. He's already scored 8 this season. I mean, they have players that can hurt teams. But I can't really see them going through in this group. What do you think?
I can't either. They certainly have made things interesting up to this point. You know, CSKA kind of gave Alaves a formula to beat Real Madrid, and that you defend deep against what has been a misfiring Real Madrid squad. Mm-hmm. I think they've gone four straight games in all competitions without scoring
a goal, which
I believe I saw on Twitter, absurdly enough, has happened just one other time in the club's history. We're talking
years. You would think they'd have sold one of the best players in the world.
Right. Yeah, precisely. Where is Ronaldo when you need him? Mm-hmm. But, you mentioned Lopetegui. I think a fair amount of pressure on him, not to the point where his seat right now is hot. I still think this is actually a Real Madrid team that is capable of, you know, challenging for a La Liga title. It's just Lopetegui is—he's faced with kind of an impossible task, isn't he? Like, how do you possibly win in this competition short of winning the darn thing again?
Mm-hmm.
Real Madrid has won this tournament three times in a row. To do so four times, I think, is impossible. I don't see them having the quality or the fortune to do it, because I think in this tournament, not only do you need to have the quality, and that is the biggest factor, but there is an element of good fortune involved as well.
Oh, absolutely. You need luck. Every team needs luck. But one thing I will say about that, I think you make your own luck.
You do.
Like, no matter how good, it can't be chance every time that the best teams get some of the more favorable calls, mm-hmm. because they're making their own luck. They're putting the ball in the right position, they're doing the right thing, and they're getting the call, you know. So a lot of people are furious about when stuff like that happens. You know, you always hear, Tom Brady and the Patriots, they get all the calls. And stuff like that, well, probably because they're good enough and they're putting themselves into the
positions.
More
often than not, yes, they're making their own luck.
Well, that's it. So Real Madrid have hit this purple patch, and they brought in Mariano Diaz to try and obviously score some of the goals that they'll be missing with Ronaldo leaving. It hasn't really worked out so far, but I mean, it's early days yet, and he can flat play. Like, so it'll be interesting to see. I can't really see anything else apart from Real Madrid winning this group, even though they've had such a terrible start.
Correct. I think ultimately it is a race for second between CSKA and Roma.
What do you think of Roma?
I've always loved Edin Dzeko. I think he's been a center forward who has
very underrated.
Career,
I think
been underrated. Exactly. I brought in Justin Kluivert, the youngster from Ajax,
mm-hmm.
Last season. I think a lot will hinge on these two games coming up, Roma and Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
I think Roma, if we're looking at it from their perspective, they have to beat CSKA at home if they want a top two spot. If they don't, going to the Russian capital, needing potentially a win there to advance to the knockout stages is a tall task.
Not impossible, but they wouldn't like to leave themselves in that position, having to go there and win.
And we've seen what Roma is capable of when they do get to the knockout stages. They're capable of making a run.
Definitely.
I maybe put them a half step below Napoli in terms of overall quality, in that they are a good step below Juventus in Serie A, but capable of beating just about anyone over two legs. So in order to put themselves in that position, I think they're going to have to figure out how to get the better of Moscow.
They're one of those teams as well that they constantly surprise me of how resilient they are, because they're one of those teams, as you're saying, they're not quite as good as Juventus, or they're not the best in Italy, but they're sort of just on the cusp, and they always seem to, they always bring out amazing players who just get snapped up by a bigger, I mean, the likes of Salah, going to Liverpool, Nainggolan, just went to Inter Milan at the start of the season. They always seem to be up against it, Roma, but they're there every year. As you said, they had a terrible start to the season actually this year in Serie A, but they seem to have turned it around the last couple of weeks. They beat Lazio in the big derby 3-1, and then Edin Dzeko, who we were just talking about, was misfiring, hadn't scored a goal in 5-6 games, and then came out and scored a hat-trick in the last match day of the Champions League. So hopefully for them, their fortunes are starting to turn. And you're saying it'll be a race for second between Roma and CSKA then? So a lot will hinge on these next two games, obviously. Do you know if the first one's in Moscow?
I don't off the top of my head. I certainly don't. Let me check. But the timing of those fixtures actually is important. I think it's worth looking up, because Roma, if they've got that first game at home, I would fancy them to get the 3 points there, which would maybe take the pressure off going to Russia.
Right. They're actually at home, the first game. Yeah.
So, yeah, that if they're home, if they're in Rome in match day three, I like their chances of getting a win there, which, as I said, would maybe lessen the pressure going to Moscow.
Absolutely. And obviously we'll be Pilsen with the wooden spoon then.
Yes.
They're joint top of the Czech league at the minute, but it's a different level. I mean, they're stepping up in their plan, and look, they have a perfect right to be there. They won all their games to get there. They won all the qualifications to get there. So
right.
They are, you can't say they don't deserve to be there, but it's just that when you look at them, they kind of look a bit under par. You know, I think they've found their level in the Czech league, and stepping up here is a bit, as you've seen, you switch off for a bit, and a team like Roma with a bunch of seasoned veterans can punish you. So I can see them going wooden spoon. Real Madrid, obviously, at the top. Who are you picking for second then to go through?
I'll go with Roma.
Roma?
Yeah.
Roma to go through, CSKA to go into the Europa League. Group H, which is the last group. You're saying that was your favourite group. That's the one that that you like the look of the most then?
It is.
Intrigues you?
I just can't get enough of this matchup between a Manchester United side that is kind of in tatters right now, mm-hmm. under Jose Mourinho, going up against Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus. Juventus firing on all cylinders. I believe they have won all 10 games in all competitions this season.
Yeah, 100%.
100%. Ronaldo coming in. Ronaldo obviously having made a name for himself at Manchester United is when he really blossomed into a world-class player. So to see him come back to Old Trafford will be fascinating, and I think this is a Juventus side that's similar to PSG. They have absolutely dominated domestically. We're talking domestic trebles, left and right, absolute domination in their own country. But now, it almost feels like now or never, mm-hmm. in this tournament. Juventus been to two Champions League finals, 2015, 2017. So I think for them, the incentive is not only to continue their impressive run of form this fall, but finish first in this group, make a statement, in showing well against Manchester United, and then going into the spring full bore, so that maybe they are able to pad a lead in Serie A, so that they're able to focus
more
full
on
intentions on Champions League, maybe.
And the one thing that jumped out to me at the start of the season, just even before the season started, Juventus have crafted a team. We often see these days teams building for the future, bringing in young, especially at Sporting Kansas City, we see it all the time. There's just a lot of youth, a lot of emphasis is put on the youth, and of course they're going to be the future, so that's the right thing to do. Juventus have went about it completely different, like this season especially. They're bringing in players, Ronaldo, Bonucci. These are seasoned veterans. These are who are playing their best football at the minute. I mean, arguably, with Ronaldo probably on the ladder, on the way down from his career.
You would think so, but I'm not fully convinced he's a human being.
Yeah, well, that's another thing as well. I mean, he's phenomenal, and in my book, he's the best player in the world, but a lot of people disagree with that. They have bought a team to win the Champions League.
Yes, they have.
This year.
Yes.
I mean, they don't want to do it next year, the year after. They don't want to hear about that. They have bought a team for this year.
It's 2019.
And that's, I think they'll be throwing everything at the Champions League this year. So sad that Buffon couldn't have been sticking around for it, but they look like they have all the tools to win it. And I mean, why not this year? Why not this year? It doesn't seem to be any other teams that are jumping out and saying, look, we are the best team in this tournament.
Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, they all look beatable.
Mm-hmm.
Manchester City has already lost to Lyon at home in this competition. It is wide open. If I like where you're going there, to where there, if there was a year for Juventus to finally break through and win this thing after coming up just short on a handful of occasions over the last decade or two, I think this might be it.
I think so too. I think we could see the old lady winning it all this year, possibly. Man United look like a team that have seen better days at the minute. You know, Jose, to be perfectly honest, I expect him to be gone. I already expected him to be gone before this point, because this is, I mean, how many times have we seen this? How many times have we seen this exact thing play out, exact thing that happened to Chelsea, exact thing happened at Real Madrid, exact thing happened at Inter Milan? He goes and he has two great seasons, gets to the third season, it's kind of a sticky patch. He picks a fight with a player and it's over.
All he does
or the board.
Is alienate people left and right. Individuals, the club, the owners.
Digs
everyone.
Them out, like really digs them out. And I mean, the special one, as he dubbed himself, he's looking like the special ones these days because it doesn't... The team doesn't look like they're playing for him anymore.
Not at all. They look completely disjointed. And this, don't get me wrong, this is a Manchester United team that has tons of quality.
Absolutely.
At every position. But they look disjointed. And people were saying after United came back to beat Newcastle 3-2 a few Saturdays ago,
yep.
Before we went to this international break, people were saying that that result saved his job. And I completely disagree. If the people in charge of Manchester United are judging Mourinho off of one result, off of one comeback result against a Newcastle side that is currently in the relegation places mm-hmm. in the Premier League, you're doing it all wrong.
Yep.
You've got to look at the whole of what you have seen basically since the summer began, right?
Yep.
When he started his complaining about no new signings and...
Well, he does that, and then he does these things like he plays certain players out of position.
Yeah.
He's over egging the pudding a bit because he's trying to say to the board, look, this is what I'm having to do. I'm having to play.
Precisely.
I'm having to play these players. I mean, nonsense, absolute nonsense, because he has the players around there to. I mean, they've spent nearly £1 billion over the last 10 years or whatever. They have the players there. And I think a really damning indictment on Mourinho's Man United team is look at the performances of some of the players that he has at the World Cup this year. Paul Pogba for France. He looked like a world beater. He looked every penny. He looked worth every penny that Man United paid for him.
Sensational, yeah.
Then he comes back to Man United and he looks like Bambi on ice. I mean, he can't play. So I think if Mourinho takes a bit of the reins off Pogba and lets him sort of have a bit more of a free role, Maric needs to step up a bit as well. I suppose they have Fred as well in there that they brought in. So another one of those Brazilians. But... do you think he'll be there for long? Do you think he's here for until the end of the season?
No, I don't.
No.
For me, a tougher question would be, is he here Christmas time?
Really?
I just don't see... When I look at this Manchester United team, and for me, it's like every week with this team, it's like grab your popcorn and just enjoy the drama, right?
Yep.
Especially if you don't support the team and you aren't emotionally invested in their... winning and losing.
I'd like to watch them lose.
It's I certainly do too, but that's neither here nor there. I look at the body language of the team. I look at a lot of the underperforming players, whether it's Pogba or Alexis Sanchez.
Mm-hmm. My God, $500,000 a week he gets paid.
Unbelievable stuff. This is a team that can do so much better. This is a team that I think could realistically finish. I don't think they could finish ahead of Man City, but I think... For them going into the season with the personnel that they had, finishing second in the Premier League, maybe winning a domestic cup and making it a deep run in the Champions League, perfectly fair expectations. But you look at them now, I don't see them leapfrogging four clubs to finish top four this season, going into next year's Champions League. They've already crashed out of the League Cup, I believe. And I don't see them putting up a fight in Champions League under Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, I don't think there's... Now that you said it, I don't think there's four teams in the Premier League that Man United are better than. I mean, they're not better than City.
Certainly not right
now. I don't
now.
Think they're better than Liverpool.
No.
I would have Spurs ahead of them too.
I think Chelsea and Spurs have performed...
Chelsea is the one I was sort of sticking on. I don't... Because I'm not really sold on Chelsea yet.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're doing all the right things. They're unbeaten. They're doing all the right things.
They've been much better than I had expected them to be under Mauricio Sarri. But rounding back to Manchester United, I think the longer they keep Mourinho, the more of a liability everything becomes there. What that means for this group is fascinating. It's a fascinating discussion because they draw Valencia at home at Old Trafford in match day two, I believe, a 0-0.
Yep.
And so that opens the door for you to finish third.
And that's kind of a false position there as well, because Valencia are the draw kings. Valencia have drawn five, six times, I think, this year in the league. Drawn with everyone, 0-0, 1-1. So they're not the most adventurous team, but they know if we can't score enough here, we're defending and we're trying to make them score. They're kind of practical the way they go about it. So they could hurt Man United, because I can't see Man United going out to Spain and getting the result out there if... a team that type of form, you know, because if they know United's coming into town, it's right, guys, shut up shop here, and we'll hit them on the counter, you know, something. So United have a lot of work to do in this group, I think, if they want to try and go through. Young Boys of Bern, I think we can just sort of kind of Wooden Spoon.
Yeah, Wooden Spoon had a nice campaign. I believe they dethroned Basel last year in Switzerland, which was kind of a new look at the top of Switzerland. But for them, yeah, the ride ends here.
And they're doing well this year as well. They're still leading the pack in Switzerland and stuff. But as you said, it's such a step up. It's this group actually will be very interesting to see.
I really like.
It's a race for second, I suppose.
It is. I do believe so. I think Juventus. They've got this fascinating two-game set with Manchester United. I think they emerge with maybe 4 points from that. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat United twice. At the same time, look, we've talked about the quality that United has. They are capable of beating Juventus at Old Trafford, certainly. Mm-hmm. But again, I like Juventus to finish top of this group, and then it's maybe a dogfight between United and Valencia, and dare I say maybe... part of the outcome of this group hinges on who is in charge of United as we enter November, December.
And a win like that, I mean, if it's... Because the next game, the first game's at Old Trafford, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a win against Juventus, imagine what that would do for morale, especially for Mourinho. Huge. Sort of galvanise the team, look, us against the world mentality.
We already saw it a little bit when they beat Newcastle.
Yeah, well, that's it. But it's just this, I mean, I think the only similarity between... Juventus and Newcastle, they both wear the same colours.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's apart from that, it's just streets
apart.
But Old Trafford's a tough place to go. If you catch Juventus on a bad night and Mourinho ends up getting a good result, who knows what their campaign looks like. What do you think? Who do you think's going through? Have you had to put your neck on the line?
My goodness. This for me is maybe one of the tougher calls. And not because I think particularly highly of Valencia, it's just I don't know if United can hold their nerve under Mourinho to emerge second. Having said all that, I'm going to have to put money where the mouth is, and I'll go with Valencia.
Valencia? Yeah. So United going out then?
Yeah.
And you know what? If United go out of the Champions League here, Mourinho's done.
Yeah, I think he's done there in early December if they go out of Champions League.
Not be here by Christmas. You heard it there first, folks. Sam Kovson's called it. Mourinho will be gone by Christmas, and as will Man United. Thank you, anyway, for listening to us. Sam... You can catch Sam on Twitter as well. What's your handle, Sam?
I can. It's, yes, you can follow me on Twitter. Handle is Skovzan, so Skovzan. Communications and Digital at Sporting Kansas City. Have been working there for the last 4 years.
Good stuff. So that's where you can catch him. You can get all his hot takes on the Champions League and the other football that's going on, especially here in MLS, because it's getting the playoff time.
It is.
It's starting to get
wonderful
real.
Time of year.
It is indeed. What do you think about short word on Sporting towards the end?
Yeah, so we're sitting third right now as we record this podcast. 4 points behind leaders FC Dallas, 3 points behind
LAFC. Who were
beaten
at the weekend?
Right. Look, I think Sporting Kansas City ultimately finishes third or fourth in the West going into the playoffs, which would give them a home knockout round game. And then from there, I think the hunger that this team has not only to bring the playoffs back to Children's Mercy Park, but to exercise the demons of knockout round defeats over the last 4 years, I think that will propel them. And I actually really do like this Sporting Kansas City team to reach the MLS Cup final against either Atlanta United or the New York Red Bulls.
See, that's where it falls down. I think Atlanta are by far the best team in the country. By far. They look like they're all playing well. They play well together. They have a plan. Tata Martino has them playing a certain plan, and they stick to it every game. They very rarely veer off. I mean, the only team to beat them at home is actually Sporting. So they've shown that they can do it. I like the look of Sporting. I actually think they'll finish first or second in the West. I think it could come down to the LAFC game.
It absolutely could. And that's the thing, is Sporting Kansas City completely controls their own destiny. They've got Vancouver on Wednesday, they've got FC Dallas at Dallas on Sunday, and then they close out the regular season at home to LAFC in a game that could decide either top spot in the conference or maybe who finishes second and third, and the difference between second and third is huge because the top two get that
You get a bye.
Knockout round bye to the conference semifinals. So we'll see. It's delicately poised. Plenty of parity, as always, especially in the West out there. So,
but just in this pantomime that soccer is, it's just it's written in the stars for Latif Blessing and Foulhaber to come here and just spoil the party on the last day of the season.
I certainly hope not. But
me
we'll
too.
See.
Me too. Hopefully they can go on and go the whole way, I suppose, anyway. But anyway, thank you, Sam Cobson, for joining us. Sam, you can catch Sam on Twitter. You can catch himself on Twitter at Connell_MCC. It's Connell_MCC. It's been the Independent Republic of Soccer podcast on Sports Radio with 10 WHB.